Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Hello and welcome to edition 203 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast straight out of the rather autumnal Norfolk, UK. And we're also on Future Radio in Norwich and brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up to their game for free by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey and we are here at Archant Towers to round up the 2017 Malaysian Grand Prix. Coming up, the marvellous Max machine, Lewis lucking out, and the most bizarre crash we've seen all season. Joining us on the pod this week, we have motoring journalist David Tillier and Damon Hill superfan, plus Mustang owner Richard Baxter. Hashtag point whore. DT, how are you? I haven't seen you on the pod for ages.
I know, it's been a while. And I was just thinking, I can't believe it's over 200 episodes. Episodes.
We had our 200th not so long ago, and you've been with us from the start, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. I think I joined just a couple of races in, didn't I? Mad.
It is mad. It is nuts, really. We've had lots of lovely messages since our 200th edition, so thanks all for that. And we're so appreciative of you listening. When we started out, DT, and you were first on the pod, we didn't even have theme music.
No, I know. No, you also didn't have sound effects of people doing pit stops either, did you?
No.
Until I came along.
what a contribution to the podcast that is. Not your best one, but definitely among them. Rich, how are you? Are you well? Are you looking forward to Damon Hill visiting?
I am, yeah. I'm excited, very excited.
I was going to do a big plug, but you've just told me the night is sold out. So just to be clear, Damon Hill is coming to Norwich. Damon Hill, legend of Formula One, is coming to Norwich for an evening with at Norwich City Football Club. It's sold out.
Yeah, I looked today at tickets and it said they're all sold out. You can't get them. Fortunately, some very kind person had a spare one going, so they've taken me as a plus one. So,
well, lucky you, hey, lucky you. It's rather nuts. I had a whole list of things we were going to do to help promote the event, and now it all feels rather pointless. But there we go. Damon's going to love it in Norwich. That's the only thing I can say.
Maybe we can get loads of people down to do like a guard of honour as he walks in and out.
Oh, that's a lovely idea. The NRF1 guard of honour. Is that, do you just want to do that though? Yeah.
I'll just be everyone like running alongside.
Oh my God. Be his runner for the day. Hopefully we can film that if we can sort that out, definitely. Okay, well, we hope all is well with you guys and girls out there too. Quick heads up, get your comments, questions and opinions in on our social media channels for next week, because we'll be doing our three pods in 3 days and it won't be back-to-back races. So we've got all the messages you've sent in the last few days as well. Don't worry, I've kept a hold of those and we'll recap those next week. But if there's anything else you want to send in to us, get them into us then and we'll review them after the Japanese Grand Prix when we've got a little bit of time. We are doing three pods in 3 days now, of course, but we've got two races to deal with, so we're a little bit chocker, but we will be taking your comments, questions and opinions, so get them in for next week on the channels, which I'll tell you and publicise later on in this podcast. But let's get on, shall we, first of all, with our Malaysia review. All hail Max Verstappen. What a birthday treat. The guy is 20. His family were all there. They clearly enjoyed it. And this, to me, is exactly why Max Verstappen is a special driver and a special talent, because one chance, one sniff, and he took it, won the race, no doubts, no questions, so assured, brilliant.
I mean, it's a drive that you wouldn't expect from a 20-year-old that's only in his third season now. He was cool, calm, collected, like you say, when he had the opportunity, he nailed the overtake, and Lewis Hamilton's not an easy person to overtake at the best of times. Admittedly, the Mercedes was on the back foot a little bit, but still, you know, you see an opportunity, you take it. Yeah, and it's a very, very mature, commanding drive and no fuss. And he carried himself in that race, I think, like a world champion, not a potential world champion.
Yeah, lap four it was that he overtook Lewis. And I don't think anyone was probably watching that race thinking, oh, well, this is the moment now for a decisive overtake to win the thing. But he took it so well. And he spoke afterwards about the fact that, you know, he knew, you know, Lewis was battling for the championship, so there's probably a real opportunity there. And just that clear thinking, just phenomenal. We saw one maybe chink in his armour when, as the race wore on, he was getting a little bit twitchy about his car, which is understandable given the season he's had, but just phenomenal composure.
Yeah, he did it brilliantly. And for someone of his age to just see that through the way he did, and we all know he can overtake and is really fast on one lap. We've seen, you know, in seasons past, every now and again it can go a bit wrong and he has a few crashes. But this season it's always seems to have been either the car has let him down or he's driving brilliantly. And it's, you know, he's got in good positions, the car's let him down. That could have happened at the weekend, but it didn't. They seem to have kind of got around some of their gremlins at Red Bull, which is good. And it's about time he had the luck on his side. Mm. Formula One on their YouTube page the last week, they put up the whole of the 2001 Malaysian Grand Prix, in which race that Jos Verstappen was racing, and he got fourth position, holding off Mika Hakkinen. So that's obviously, you know, it's obviously got like a bit of a Malaysia in his blood from his dad. Yeah.
The Verstappen family loves Malaysia, it's official. I mean, we've called his season character building, haven't we? I've quite liked that, because I think there's no harm in how quick his rise has been for him having a season where he's really having to dig in. But that's a that's plenty of reward. I mean, I don't know if he still is, but he was certainly before the weekend the driver with the least mileage in 2017, which is f***ing criminal for Red Bull, to be honest. His first podium since April.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite the same, because obviously Lewis had won championship the year before, but this is almost like 2009 for Lewis. You know, he was used to being fast and being there, and then had a season where at the start they were pretty much nowhere and they had to claw themselves back, and eventually came good sort of later in the season. And I think this is a similar kind of character building season for Max, obviously without the world championship the year before, but you know, he had a stellar opening season, didn't he? Mm. Or stellar opening first season with Red Bull, should I say. And yeah, so I think it's definitely character building, definitely good for him. And I think you can see this point in the championship that actually has matured quite significantly just over the last however many races.
Max's sister was there. Victoria, I think was her name. Oh, yeah. She got a lot of camera time. And I only caught a glimpse of her early on without them saying who she was. And I thought, oh, that's quite clearly Max's sister, because they do, you know, quite distinctive looking. Jos himself was very complimentary after the race about Red Bull, like to the point where you're listening to him going, oh, what does he want? So what's that about? Because there's been a bit of criticism, I suppose, and a bit of impatience about things. And I thought that was quite deliberate from Jos, that he was bigging Red Bull up and just saying how well they'd done. Maybe, obviously, conversely to Renault, who, of course, are basically being binned out of Milton Keynes.
Mm. Yeah, I did hear that comment that he made, and I'm not quite sure where it's come from or like you say, what he's after.
That's so cynical.
Yeah. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's just, you know, he's pleased that the Red Bull have put together a great package for that race, and you know, and to be fair to them, they have. And I think they've done, you know, the Red Bull car is a good car. You know, it's just Ferrari and Mercedes definitely have the edge on that Renault power unit.
Is it a good enough car to? I mean, they say they're looking forward to Suzuka, so you know, it will be really interesting to see if they can deliver this. Because in Singapore they were quick, and you know, if they do it for a third race in the trot, we'll have to see. But we'll of course get into that in our Japanese Grand Prix preview that's coming up. One more thing in terms of Red Bull that does need to be addressed: Max Verstappen had a very good qualifying session too, didn't he? He was qualified third, didn't he, behind Raikkonen and Lewis. The 11th time he's out qualified Daniel Ricciardo this season, out of 11 out of 15. I mean, that isn't even a battle, that's just being smashed.
Yeah, he's done really well. And it's just a shame in the race, of course, he hasn't been on the podium or, you know, as many times as Ricciardo has.
Mostly due to reliability. And we're talking about it's the car that's let him down more than anything, or the engine.
Yeah, definitely. It's something's, you know, he's had great starts. He's been up in second and third, and then the car's just broken, basically. Something's gone. I think the only crash I can remember him being involved in properly, which was race-ending for him, was in Singapore, which wasn't his fault. Other than that, I can't think far enough back to when there was he was last involved in a crash that took him out of the race. So
I think the only time he did, he ended up coming back to finishing the points. But
Hungary was it?
Okay, well done, Max. We're all fans here. Keep up the character building. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the NRF1 podcast, then get subscribed through your podcast player of choice. Just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe. You'll find the link for you, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, all of those podcast players. And of course, if yours isn't there, then let us know with an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Right, let's fire up the NRF1 pit stops with DT's very own impression. Having not discussed Mercedes already, which is weird because we normally always have to on a race review, let's discuss Mercedes. Where's all this pace gone, Rich? What's happened?
It's strange. I mean, in qualifying, Hamilton was certainly quick. I mean, you know, Raikkonen was looking pretty good. He probably could have nicked pole position, but he had a bit of a moment, I think, at the last corner, which cost him a little bit of time. I don't know. I'm not expert enough to judge how much it cost him. But yeah, it just kind of got to the race, and he said he was having a problem with derating all over the place. But we've heard that before from Mercedes. I don't know if that was just some setting they had to keep the engine running cooler, of course, in the high humidity. But it seems strange that it's just gone. I guess the aero package they introduced hasn't worked as well. But then in a straight line, they've got the power there and they seem to be fine there. So,
yeah, I'm probably being slightly disingenuous because I know after the race, Toto Wolff said that, or no, I think it was Susie Wolff had said that they were really struggling with their tyres. And so they were heating up too quickly. They didn't have the longevity in the long runs, which meant that they couldn't really keep the pace over a long period of time, which I guess meant that Lewis was managing his tyres for a lot of the race and probably did quite well to come home in second. And I guess obviously was helped out by Ferrari, who we'll get stuck into in a moment. But it's such a quick turnaround between Malaysia and Japan that it might be difficult for them to correct that, I suppose.
Well, they're quite different tracks, I think. And I think Suzuka is going to be a close fight. I think Ferrari are so close to the Mercedes power that I think there's not going to be a lot in it, and it's going to come down to the drivers at the end of the day. But I think with regards to Malaysia, I think a lesser man wouldn't have held on to the position that Lewis did, and you can see that from Bottas's point of view. And Bottas is a good driver, yet, you know, really didn't have a great afternoon at all.
Sure, I'll touch on that because it's the next thing on my list. I think Valtteri's actually said that this is the toughest time he's had in Formula One so far.
I didn't hear him say that, but yeah, I mean, was he referring to the race specifically, or was it across the whole season?
I did see the story, yeah. He said it was the most difficult time. That's what I saw from it, basically. Yeah. He struggled for pace all weekend in Sepang, finished Sunday's race fifth, nearly 44 seconds behind Hamilton and 20 behind Vettel, who started last. It was saying, since the summer break, he hasn't been able to get near Hamilton.
Has he got any quotes there?
Yes. It may be the most difficult time of my career so far in terms of how it feels every time I go in the car.
Oof. Is probably the best car he's ever been in.
Yeah. I just want to perform. I want to be in a good level, and I haven't been doing that for some time for various reasons. There are many question marks still for me, for the team, so I definitely want to turn it around quickly. He says, if I keep doing races like this for long, that is not going to be a good thing for anyone. Team needs points. I need the points. I want the points.
Go on, Valtteri. Good attitude. Good attitude. But yeah, been tough.
I do like his honesty.
Well, he'll get a chance to deliver a little bit more in Suzuka, maybe. Just to prove the point, there's always someone worse off. Ferrari. Oh, dear. I've literally written, oh, dear. This was horrendous. I mean, given, as we've officially defined, they had their worst ever Grand Prix in their history in Singapore by not making it past the first corner, or roughly, you know, certainly first lap with both cars for the first time in their history. This time, Kimi Raikkonen couldn't actually take the start. Great drive from Sebastian Vettel, of course, but that was blown out of the water by what happened in qualifying, which is just unfortunate. Is it just that they're having a really bad run of it at the worst possible time?
I think that's really just bad luck on their part. They couldn't have planned. I imagine they couldn't have planned for the failures that they had. It's just luck, really, that that they've had two cars fail on the same weekend, but also at the worst possible time for Raikkonen, because that's really embarrassing. You can kind of, the whole thing with Vettel, you kind of go, well, okay, well, you know, he had a problem in free practice. That meant he wasn't able to take part in qualifying, and that's why he's at the back of the grid. And, you know, it happens, it happens. But to take your car round on the parade lap, or to, you know, take the car round, put it on the grid, and then have to wheel it off again, and then not actually make it out of the garage again. That's embarrassing. That's really, really embarrassing. I really like Kimi. I felt really sorry for him, and I thought, you know, I'm pretty sure the race would have been his had he not, you know.
Because Red Bull are saying that they would have beaten Ferrari anyway.
I think it would have been a better fight between Verstappen and Kimi. I don't think Hamilton would have been against either of them, but I think on pure pace alone, if Kimi had decided to turn up for work, he could have done it. But plus, the problem with Kimi is you're never quite sure when he's going to turn up and really give it his all. Sometimes he can be amazing, and sometimes you just think, well, do you care?
We just got probably robbed of an even better race. That was the thing. Just the antithesis, though, isn't it, of Max drive, one opportunity and taking it. Ferrari seem to be blowing or having their opportunities blown for them one way or the other. Still, Sebastian Vettel, I mean, he took it. I mean, to be honest, you wondered if he could have gone better than fourth, really. He didn't. I guess, as they all said, the tyres kind of gave up on him in the end. But having come from the back of the grid to pushing fourth, and he was fourth quite early on, he did a great job, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He had a really good drive. It reminded me of one, I think it was 2012, possibly, in the Red Bull in Abu Dhabi, I think, where he was last and he came through. And I think he got the podium then. But it was, you know, a great drive. He's obviously got the car underneath him to come through. We had some interesting moments on the way.
Well, should we touch on this now? I mean, what as him and Lance Stroll collided effectively on the in-lap after the race, when everyone should just be, you know, waving and clapping at each other. I mean, I think the steward said racing, they can't really call it a racing incident because they're not racing, but they just sort of basically said, oh, it's your own fault, deal with it. There could be major recriminations, because if his gearbox isn't salvageable, he could have a 5-place grid penalty come Japan, unless Ferrari can convince the FIA it was a force majeure. But in terms of the actual footage of it, how do you see it, E.T.?
Well, I watched it again today, and from my sofa, it looked like it was Vettel's fault, because Stroll was just merrily making his own run. It was almost like Vettel sort of turned across him.
I kind of thought, though, that Stroll was going the other way completely, because he wanted to pick up all the marbles and what have you, but he just went across and didn't know Seb was there. Likewise, Seb, why is he going so quickly around the outside when they're just poodling around trying to get home? And a bit like his Singapore start, just needless, without really thinking something could go wrong here, I suppose.
And it seemed like sort of Vettel went towards the apex as well. So it's kind of, I mean, I definitely still think there's a bit more blame on Vettel's part, because he had better visibility. You know, he could see where Stroll was. Stroll shouldn't be expecting to see, you know, the visibility out of those things is pretty awful as well. I did see a video on YouTube that was from one of the other cars following. And I think the camera is mounted on the nose, so you can see both cars, and it makes for quite interesting viewing.
Brilliant to see a crash where the car is completely obliterated, and you go, "Why the f*** did that happen?" Because his rear wheel was basically over the other side of the car. It was absolutely nuts.
It does show you how safety has come along with the tethers on the wheels, because we've seen, you know, crashes like that, wheels would come off and everything, and they were still attached and it stayed on well. So
yeah, that's very good. That's a very good point. That. What it did mean is that we got to see Sebastian Vettel get a lift on Pascal Wehrlein's car, which is always good, even though it's against the rules. I assume he hasn't been fined for that, because that would probably improve his mood, no doubt. And David Coulthard said, he did it once. It was the most frightening thing he did in his life, when there was a perfectly good safety car, of course, that would have given Seb a lift behind. Don't worry about that. Formula One is safe enough for someone to be able to perch on the side of a race car.
Makes for a better Facebook profile picture, though, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah.
And also, it's good for memes as well. I did see one today, which was like a receipt from Uber, and someone had just put the SA at the front of the Uber logo to make it the sort of Sauber Uber.
Sauber,
yeah, Sauber.
That's a good shout. I like that. Yeah. Good work.
There was also the steering wheel fiasco as well, because, of course, he took the steering wheel off his car and people were saying, oh, what's he hiding? And then, of course, they didn't realise that he's just thrown it into the car of the Mercedes young driver who's given a lift back. Oh. So if there was a secret, he's just going to basically give it to his rivals.
I don't think there's a secret.
Something that all the other teams have seen in each other's steering wheels. It's not something they can really keep. You know, it's the thing that the driver holds on to throughout the race. I'm pretty sure the other teams know exactly what all the other teams have got.
Onboard cameras and things that you can watch throughout the race.
Presumably, they could still move the Ferrari, but they would have just dragged it back, I suppose.
I think they lifted it on a flatbed truck and took it because there's three wheels.
Steve Jones, I think, said it's the quickest way to turn the Ferrari into a Robin Reliant. And I think he said, good luck with that, which is probably a fair point, and we'll see how they get on.
Michael Schumacher did it, of course, in Spa in 98, so...
Great company. McLaren, I wouldn't say things are going too badly at McLaren. Just, you know, it's all coming together and then it's all going to fall apart, isn't it, when Honda leave? How about that for timing? But Stoffel Vandoorne is someone who had a cracking weekend. I think it was his best qualifying to date in Formula One. He finished the race seventh, but this isn't a one-off, is it? I think since the summer break, we're seeing some really good signs from Stoffel.
Yeah, I think he's shown that he deserves that seat now. He's shown talent, but I think lately, I think he's definitely shown that he's got what it takes. And especially, you know, being in a seat next to Fernando Alonso, that's not a position that anyone will relish. Yet, you know, he managed to not just a little bit outperform Fernando this weekend, but dramatically outperform Fernando. You know, Fernando at the start of the race on the grid walk he said, you know, we are where we are, but we have very little chance of scoring any points today. So he was already assuming that it wasn't going to go well from that point. So, well done, Stoffel.
Fernando was too busy slagging off Kevin Magnussen, which we may touch on later. Force Indias, they had some fun. Esteban Ocon had some fun. He complained about Sergio Perez. It looked like a pretty silly, actually childish one for him complaining about it early on in the race. And his engineer said, we could probably have had that as a report, as in, please don't publicise that sort of stuff, Esteban. You're not doing yourself any favours. And then had a little bit of a mare with not telling his engineer that he'd had a collision, I think, pretty much, and that it would have been handy for them to speak to Charlie Whiting about it. But I think Mark Webber quite liked that Esteban just got on with it, but I suppose he did get on with it until he then brought it up later. But yeah, one of those races where Esteban, as good as he is, didn't really have a great day of it, did he?
No. It was a bit strange that he had the incident with Sainz and the team were like, did he hit you? You have to tell us. And it seems strange they were getting him to tell him, because it's just like, well, you're watching the race, you can see Charlie Whiting's going to be watching the race. I don't think he's going to listen to too much to drivers whinging all the time. Otherwise, if that was the case, that someone, you know, you have to say someone's hit you for it to be investigated, you're going to have everyone just say, he hit me, just to try and get an investigation to get his got penalised, isn't it?
Now, that's an interesting point, actually, because you wonder if Force India, his engineer, they maybe sounded a little bit tired of him in that way, or not tired of him, but just like just get on with it, Esteban, really. Especially given, as we found out now, Sergio Perez wasn't particularly well over the weekend. He had an IV drip and actually was battling a virus, and you know that would have probably put an extra strain on the team itself.
Yeah, I think the way that they conducted themselves on the radio, I think, reflected worse on the team than it did on Ocon, to be fair, because the difference between the guys on the pit wall and Ocon, to a large degree, is that Ocon is in the car with all that adrenaline and it's all going on, and you can't expect to be media professional 100% of the time, you know, and they do a good job most of the time to remain okay, and then the rest of the time they just entertain us. I think with regards to sort of letting Charlie Whiting know about what's going on, I think you need to have your say, because it just highlights the issue. They're probably already aware of it, but it just highlights that it was an issue. But also, they're not just looking at those drivers, they're looking at all the drivers on the grid. So actually be able to say, hang on a minute, you just need to look my way for just a second kind of thing, actually is probably in their benefit. But as long as they don't take the and cry wolf all the time, you know, which I don't think is an issue. I don't think it's something we have to worry about.
Force India also were unhappy about other teams drying their pit boxes, I guess, with giant hair dryers. So, you know, why not? If it's breaking the rules, don't do it, everyone.
That's been done for so long, though, hasn't it? They always dry it to make it easier.
Leaf blowers they used to use, didn't they?
Yeah.
Get over it, Force India. It's obviously just one of those weekends, and obviously we hope Sergio recovers well enough for Suzuka, although it didn't sound that hopeful. We'll have to see.
He got sixth, so he was obviously doing okay.
That's fair enough, yeah. That's better than I would do fully fit, so there we go. Toro Rosso, a quick mention of Pierre Gasly on his debut. He finished, which was a start, 14th, lapped, but then a lot of people were lapped. So, you know, well done. You've got one more race to prove yourself, possibly. We'll see how that goes. And just a word on Malaysia as a Grand Prix, because we should say goodbye, because that's it. And I'm really sad about this. Mm. And it's actually not very often, I think, that a race goes, you know what, Formula One, off. We can't afford this. We've got perfectly good motorsport to deal with. We don't need you. And that almost says it all, because the drivers respect the track. It really pulls everything out of them. We've had some phenomenal races there in the past, and it's just a real shame. And maybe when F1 and Chase Carey and Liberty Media sit down and think about what they want the calendar to look like, they should work out a way of bringing Malaysia back into the fold.
Well, the Prime Minister's already said that it might return. So we shall see.
Yes.
But yeah, I think it's a shame. Such a great circuit. We've had some amazing battles there. I can't believe it's 17, 18, it's 18 years now, I think. 99 was the first Grand Prix, isn't it? So I can't believe it's that long, because it doesn't, I still feels to me like a new track. I still remember sort of it coming on to, you know, because we didn't, back then especially, we didn't used to get very many new tracks. So it still feels like a relatively new track, and now to be saying goodbye to it seems very, very weird. But at least we had something interesting and an interesting farewell for it.
Mm. I don't know what the facilities are like on the inside with the garages and everything, but when you see the grandstands and the design, it looks like it could have been designed yesterday. Mm. It looks amazing. It's just a shame it always seemed to be so empty. And we were discussing earlier about this is like the best turnout they've had, and yet you still look at the grandstand and they're only half full. And it's just a shame there's not the following there really for Formula One. But hopefully that's something that under new owners they can increase and do better.
Okay, as always, you can follow us on social media. Get those comments and questions in too. The channels are Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. The handle at the NRF1. As always, please send us emails. We love reading them. nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And the website is nrf1.uk. You'll find blogs, stats, our latest prediction league standings. More on that to come this week. And more Callum's race reviews are there too. Betting tips as well. Just visit nrf1.uk. Okay, off the weekend's time, gents. Let's rattle through these, shall we? Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend.
I'm going to give it to Verstappen. Good qualifying, good race.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy 20th.
I'm going to give it to, for a change, I'm going to give it to Van Dorn.
Yeah. I would probably have given it to Stoffel, but Max is perfectly a good shout.
There's some other good drivers in there, because Stroll got 8th as well, and he's really picked up points. Perez, being half alive, got 6th. So, I mean, there were some good drives from a lot of people.
I think hopefully he's better than half alive. Team?
I'm going to say Red Bull. I wouldn't normally, but they've, you know, got round some gremlins. Both cars finished the race, both on the podium.
Yeah, I'll second that. I didn't see them really put a foot wrong all weekend, to be perfectly honest with you. The car was good, drives were good. It was nice to see them succeeding again.
Pastor Maldonado of the weekend, or go to the weekend, or if you're Troy Dunham, Daniel Kvyat of the weekend. He's got nothing else to do at the moment.
I want to give it to, it's kind of strange, but Franz Tost. He was on Sky, he was the pit wall reporter guy basically for them, not a reporter, but you know, he's in contact with him on the pit wall, and he basically, after Sainz had his coming together with Ocon, he basically, everyone was saying, well, that's Sainz's fault, he was given space and he just drove into the side of him, and it went to him and he was like, that was 100% not Sainz's fault, and he just being like straight, really blunt, and it was like, all right, calm down. We credit, it was just, okay, he's defending his, you know, his driver, but sometimes it'd be nice if they could also see sense.
Yes, that would be nice, wouldn't it, seeing a little bit of sense. DT?
I'm going to give it to Jolyon Palmer. He had a bit of a mare of a race, didn't he?
I've got Jolyon written down here, yes. The bit where he spun, I think he spun twice in about four corners, yeah. And the camera cut to his dad, dear Jonathan, who is, of course, Norfolk race circuit owner, yeah. And his face said everything, really.
Pretty much, yeah. I think he's already pretty much guaranteed not to be back next year, isn't he? I think from what I can see. Yeah, I think that just shows. I really had high hopes for him, but unfortunately that just shows that he's not quite at the level. I think
in fairness to Jolyon, he's been trying really hard. It's been an incredibly difficult situation, and he had a great race in Singapore, and I just think this weekend maybe the penny dropped and it's a bit like, this team don't want me here, no one wants me here, what's the point, you I'm going to go and spin the car twice in the same lap. Deal with it.
It was trying too hard in some ways as well, because he was like, let's have some fun, let's get some positions, and he was throwing his car sometimes where it wasn't going to go. So
it's like me in a cart. Right. And highlight, I wanted to say the radio messages. We had some brilliant radio messages, didn't we? Fernando Alonso saying that Nico was right about Kevin Magnussen, who was actually my backup for Pastor of the weekend as well, because he had a funny old race.
My highlight is an Alonso one, actually, but it's really annoying because I've been sat here trying to think who it was he did it to. But when he was squeezed by whoever it was he was racing with on one of the corners, and then on, I think it was on the first corner and then the second
turn one,
corner.
Turn one and two.
And then he just held the steering lock open just to sort of push him out.
Magnussen.
Yeah.
It was Magnussen. Because he tried to dive down the inside and then just bumped him out a bit, didn't he? Yeah. It was brilliant.
And it was perfect because it wasn't... It was perfectly executed. No, it wasn't kind of like, I'm just going to hit you kind of Vettel style or whatever. It was perfectly kind of like, no, screw you. I'm coming through and I am a dominant driver and you are my bitch.
Well put, DT. Well put. Brilliant. Okay. Hello, Rich.
I think it was Alonso again for me, but just the way he just decided that he was going to try and ruin Vettel's race a bit by holding him up and stopping him going for Ricciardo, and just hearing Vettel have a little bit of a disappointed dad moment. Yeah. Kind of,
oh, come on. I thought you were better than this. Yeah, I'm disappointed. You've disappointed yourself, me. Poor Seb.
That's disappointed.
Yeah, that's it.
Poor Seb. Not like he's never done anything wrong, is it? Right, race rating. Out of 11, shall we? Who wants to get, I mean, you know, it was a good start, but then it just felt like it didn't really have a lot. I'd probably give it, looking at the other races, maybe a 6.
Yeah, I was going to say there was some, it was it kind of st- most of the action was further down the field in the points positions.
There were a lot of overtakes.
There was, yeah. And it was quite interesting for a while, but then you could kind of see where it was going towards the end. So I'm going to go 6.5.
I think the race was a 6, but getting to see Max back on the top step, I think just nudges it up to a 7 for me.
That sounds like a 6.5 in my head, but that's good. And final question, who will have the biggest smile heading home on their plane? It's quite this question tends to be quite easy.
Just the Verstappens, the family in general.
The Verstappens on the Verstappen jet.
Daniel Ricciardo, because he has the biggest smile all the time.
Oh. Which I think is what Callum says as well, so fair enough.
Just another quick point. Have you seen the cover for the F1 2017 game?
Yeah. Super.
Hilarious.
And on that note, right, what do I have to say? The NRF1 Grand Prix, now I haven't started editing that yet, but it will be with us, all the great footage from our wonderful annual event, and it will be annual because we're going to do it next year, most definitely. We are on a 3 pods in 3 days, which means that our Japanese preview and Japanese predictions podcasts are on their way. Remember to get your views and comments in for next week when we do a bit of tweets and social. And in the meantime, keep... in touch with us over on our social feeds and especially the website nrf1.uk. Until next time, which will be very soon, it's goodbye. Goodbye from Rich.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from DT.
Adios.
Goodbye from myself. Goodbye. Thanks to our prior partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. Sign up to the game at gpro.net/nrf1. And thanks to Future Radio. And thanks to Rich, who actually brought in some cookies as podcast snacks, which has never happened before. So that's wonderful. I'm now going to eat my cookie. I'm almost salivating as we do this.
Mine's gone.
Yeah, and DT's actually already eaten his. This has been the NRF1 podcast. That was Malaysia. For this season and forever, maybe. It's only au revoir as we swiftly switch attention to Suzuka. We'll be back quicker than it takes Lewis Hamilton to win at roulette. Until then, goodbye.
Good evening, everyone. Steve Ross speaking to you from the depths of my bedroom in my house in Norwich. Just wanted to add a slight addition to the podcast tonight of the Malaysian Grand Prix review. Just really want to touch on briefly, before I go and have my lovely carvery tonight, on the incident that happened after the race between Vettel and Stroll colliding with each other after the checkered flag had gone down. Really, I want to add my sort of outrage, but as it's now Tuesday, my outrage is long gone, but what the heck, I'll get on with it. Basically, when you look at the onboard of Vettel, you can clearly see that before the incident, when he was probably about a half a car's width behind Stroll on the left, you could see by the look of his helmet, he was looking to the left. He was looking at Stroll. He knew he was there, in my opinion. And he had plenty of room on his right-hand side. This is Vettel. And he was steadily gaining to go past Stroll, if you like, on the, you know, final lap, whatever you call it, after the checkered flag. And the whole time that he moved across, for whatever reason, in sort of gaining sort of speed, really, that Stroll had, he was still looking in his direction. He knew he was there before he'd really got within more than half a car's length. And it would have been plainly there in his mirror, even just before the impact. So a bizarre incident. You couldn't really say, in my opinion, a loss of concentration. You know, the whole time he knew he was there. You could see that from Vettel's onboard. And in result of that, he wasn't able to get back to the back to sort of Parc Fermé conditions, where we all know you have to then have the car weighed, etc. And one of the rules, correct me anyone if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty certain one of the rules is that you actually have to have the steering wheel attached in the car. As we all saw, he took it with him. Now, I don't know if anybody saw the Toto Wolff interview afterwards, but he thought that in the dying sort of laps of the race that Vettel was running out of fuel, so why he backed off. So my theory is, did he not have enough fuel to get back to the mandatory requirements? I think it's, correct me again if I'm wrong, but I think it's a litre and a half. I think you have to have by the end of the race or something like that. So was that a case that it was deliberate? I don't know. I'm not into conspiracy theorists, as you know, I've said in the past. Some of you may recall me saying that. But the other thing that really probably infuriated me more is the fact that the FIA or whoever's the race director, not the race director, I was trying to think of his name. Race steward, there we go. My mind's a muddle tonight. Race steward looked at it, which was fine. Decided to take no action against Vettel, which kind of infuriated me mostly about the whole incident. I think it would have been harsh to give him maybe like a grid penalty or something like that. Fine, maybe. Penalty points, probably top end. But to sort of say no action taken, it was just almost like a racing incident, if you like, was ridiculous. You could see that from the onboards, as I just explained, in my humble opinion. And Vettel then, afterwards, in his interview, sort of said, I don't know what he was doing, pointing a finger at Stroll. I was coming across, or he drove into me. I quite forget what the words were, but basically blaming him. And the whole time, he didn't really look too bothered. He had a little bit of a smile on his face. It didn't really sound like he was too gutted. It looked like there, to me, there was possibly a little bit more that meets the eye to it. You know, I don't want to go too far into the conspiracy theory side of it, because I hate all of that. But I find myself sort of asking questions, really, in that sort of area. So as to what the whole incident was about, whether I'm completely wrong, you know, or whether I'm right, it didn't take a penalty. You know, I've just read tonight on the internet that the gearbox of Vettel seemed to be okay, because I did wonder whether he might get some just deserve and end up having to take a gearbox penalty for this week's race in Japan. But it looks to be okay, which is fairly typical, as you can say.
But I just thought it was bizarre. I think it was a bit suspicious and sort of disappointing and suspicious at the same time of the race stewards or FIA's decision, you know, not to really penalise them, but to come out with a statement to sort of say that you know, it was almost just like a racing incident. You know, there was nobody's fault, which just infuriated me even more. And just to add one final point, don't forget, the head of the FIA is Jean Todt, former chairman or head of Ferrari. Just to leave it at that before I go have my lovely carvery. Ciao.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.